Right, Alexander, let's do an update on what's going on in Nagorno-Karabakh. And the situation seems to be changing a lot from day to day, and I'm having a hard time getting a handle on it because I also think there's a lot of fog of war around this conflict. You don't get much information coming out, and I tend to think that the information that's coming out is either way pro Azerbaijan or pro Armenia, even though I think it's weighted much more towards Azerbaijan, to be quite honest. I think Turkey is definitely flooding the interwebs with their narrative. That's just my take on it. I also noticed that the Russian state media site, RT, is not really reporting much on this, which is very curious. To me, at least, it signals that something is not going right between Russia and Armenia. That's what it signals to me, because if things were going well between that partnership, I would imagine that RT would be reporting a little more frequently as to what's happening. So that's really curious to me. I'm just putting it out there. We also have the news that, which I also think is interesting, which you can touch upon, which is that the U.S. is now involved. And Mike Pompeo was looking to broker the ceasefire or to do something with this situation, because it looks like Russia's mediation failed. We also have a statement from Russian President Putin, who said that, and I'm taking this from Al Jazeera, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he had hoped that the U.S. would help Moscow broker a solution to the conflict. I also find this as a strange statement. It's not saying that Russia can't solve the conflict. I guess it's Vladimir Putin saying, since they're talking with the U.S. and with Mike Pompeo, I hope they could come to a solution that I guess Vladimir Putin is saying we couldn't help. I mean, a lot of fog of war here, and I think we need to maybe cut through a lot of it. What's going on?
There is a huge amount of fog of war. And can I first of all begin by the most important thing, which is the military side of things. One of the great problems, what is adding to the fog of war, and this touches also a bit on the RT question that you were raising, is that there are some Russian nationalist sites, I'm not going to name them, but we all know them, some of which are run by ex-military people, who are very, very hostile, we've discussed this before, to Prime Minister Pashinyan. And in what they are doing, they are basically amplifying Azerbaijanian Turkish narratives, I think, because what they basically want to see is a crisis in Armenia, which will lead to the fall of the Prime Minister of Armenia, Mr. Pashinyan. If you drill through all of this, and I've said this previously, it reminds me an awful lot of what I've seen in other conflicts. If you actually go and study the maps and listen very carefully to what each side is saying, the thing that becomes, at least to me, entirely clear is that the fighting is in stalemate. There are a lot of artillery exchanges, a lot of strikes, airstrikes by each side upon the other, not using their respective air forces, by the way. The Azerbaijanians use drones. The Armenians tend to use long-range missiles. But, you know, there's strikes, there's artillery exchanges. And each side, and especially the Azerbaijanians, send troops into particular villages from time to time or places. They photograph themselves there. This is then amplified as an advance. And then, of course, they pull back. Then the Armenians go in. So it goes swaying backwards and forwards. And the Azerbaijanians also are recycling, and this is perhaps more the Azerbaijanians than the Armenians, the same information repeatedly. So, for example, they did apparently achieve the destruction of six S-300 surface-to-air missile launchers, which, by the way, is quite an achievement. It's a sophisticated system. But every couple of days,
they
knocked out six Armenian S-300 launchers. But they have reported this repeatedly, several times, giving the impression that this is happening again and again and again. Whereas if you drill down, it clearly relates to one specific incident. So we have a military stalemate. What we don't yet have is a diplomatic breakthrough. And we have various people, various countries now, maneuvering around, trying to find ways of brokering that breakthrough. Now, the thing to understand is that back in the 1990s, a group, the so-called Minsk group, under the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, was set up to broker a compromise between Armenia and Azerbaijan and to resolve this conflict. That consists essentially of three powers: Russia, the United States, and France. These are the three key chairmen of this group. And obviously, the Russians have been leading the negotiations, but the other two countries are also involved. France is also involved, and the United States is always involved in these conflicts. So when Putin said that he is expecting the US to help, what he was referring to, and if you see the whole context of his comments, he was referring to US participation in the Minsk group. I don't think he was looking at a separate diplomatic initiative. Pompeo did invite the foreign ministers of Armenia and Azerbaijan to Washington, and they did go there, though no actual agreement was reached. But it seems that the big next step is that it seems that both Aliyev, the president of Azerbaijan, and the prime minister of Armenia, who is Pashinyan, are now talking about going to Moscow, and there will be a further negotiation there, which I suspect Putin himself will chair. Putin, by the way, has given an extensive interview about this topic, which is quite interesting, and it explains, I think, also some of the sort of silence which Russian TV is giving to this story. I mean, Russian foreign broadcasts, which is that he went out of his way to say that Russia is trying to be impartial because they're fulfilling a mediation role. But he also made comments which I think the Armenians will, rather the Azerbaijanians will not like. So, for example, he says that Azerbaijan is a country with close relations with Russia. But then he says there are over 2 million Azerbaijanis living in Russia, both those who have come to Russia in search of jobs and those who live here permanently. They send billions of dollars to their families back home. All these people have stable and close ties with Russia at the humanitarian level, person to person, business and family ties. Now, the point, of course, he's making is that with the Azerbaijanian economy in some difficulties because of the fall in the oil price, Azerbaijan depends on remittances from Russia to keep its economy going. Then he went on to say things like, we certainly cannot forget what happened in the destiny of the Armenian people, the Armenian nation during World War I. This is an enormous tragedy for the Armenian people. This conflict broke out not just as an interstate conflict or struggle for territories. It started with ethnic confrontation. Regrettably, it is also a fact that violent crimes against the Armenian people were also committed in Sumgayit. Sumgayit is an Azerbaijanian city where there was a massacre of Armenians in, I believe, 1988. That's when they were both part of the Soviet Union. And then he goes on to say, and later in Nagorno-Karabakh, we must consider all this in a package. So he is saying we are impartial, we are even-handed, we are prepared to mediate with both sides. But he is making his sympathies at the same time fairly clear if you drill down. And then he had a lot to say about Turkey. He was asked about whether or not Russia is concerned about Turkey. And he went out of his way to say that Russia is not afraid of Turkey. And then he says, I do not know about President Erdogan's plans or his attitudes towards the Ottoman legacy. You should ask him about it. But I know that our bilateral trade exceeds $20 billion. I know that Turkey is really interested in continuing this cooperation. I know that President Erdogan is pursuing an independent foreign policy. Despite a lot of pressure, we implemented the Turk Stream project together rather quickly. So in effect, what he is saying to the Turks is, just as he said to the Azerbaijanians, don't rock the boat for with us. You have economic linkages with us. So I think Aliyev is coming to Moscow. I think Pashinyan will be coming to Moscow. I think there will be negotiations. I think the fighting is essentially in deadlock. And I think there will be pressure from the Russians on the Turks and on the Azerbaijanians to come to a stable ceasefire, not a political settlement, but a stable ceasefire. And I think that Putin is looking to the US and France to weigh in and at the same time not to try and capitalize on this conflict situation between Turkey and Russia to try to create problems between Turkey and Russia. So I think this is what we're seeing at the moment.
Okay, when two questions. When are they planned to go to Moscow? Have they set a date?
Question no, they
number
haven't.
One.
No.
Okay, they haven't.
Yeah.
From what I've read, I think there's no doubt that both France and the United States are essentially telling Azerbaijan and Turkey to back off.
Yes.
I mean, that's also the statements that I got, not only from Mike Pompeo, but Trump also hinted at it as well in a press conference, you know, to just back off of Armenia. That's the impression I got.
Yes. And we're also seeing, by the way, Erdogan is becoming extremely angry with everybody. So he's now accusing the Russians of backing Armenia, the Russians of sending arms to Armenia. He is having another quarrel with Macron, and he's called Macron rude things. He's called him Macron, you know, mentally unstable and Islamophobic. And the French have sort of reduce their, you know, they've recalled their ambassador, and he's arguing with the US over the S-400 missile system that the Russians sold him. All of this is a sign that Erdogan is becoming very angry with everybody. And by the way, another player, which we also have to consider, is Iran, which has today announced that it's moving a military force, a brigade to the border, the Azerbaijanian border. And of course, Iran also, to some extent, tilts towards Armenia. So the pressure is building. And as I said, the fighting is now in deadlock. So I'm confident where we are going to see a diplomatic breakthrough before long. When I say diplomatic breakthrough, I think I must qualify that. What we're going to see is a ceasefire. And we're going to see more negotiations. But we need to be very clear, this has not changed the fundamentals of this conflict in any way.
Okay, so some headlines, just to add some more context. From TASS, Russia, a trusted mediator in Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, Armenian president. Moscow demonstrated its commitment to finding a peaceful solution, said Armen Saskisyan. Okay, that's from Armenia. Armenia is coming out with a lot of statements, actually, commending Russia for its mediation. That's the first one. On the Azerbaijan side, Nagorno-Karabakh, fighting continues, Baku issues Russia a warning. This is from Al Jazeera. Baku issues Russia a warning. Armenia, Azerbaijan blame each other for the continuation of the conflict as Aliyev warns Moscow not to get involved. They're warning Moscow not to get involved. From the Turkish side of things, and Erdogan says, Turkey is ready to work with Russia for Karabakh peace. This is coming from Hurriyet Daily News. Turkey is in a statement that Erdogan said on Friday, after Friday prayers in Istanbul, Erdogan said that Azerbaijan offering Turkey to have a place in the peace process was righteous. So in other words, Erdogan is saying that he wants to be included in this Minsk forum, this Minsk group. And he says Turkey has a right to be there. And he's signaling to Russia to let Turkey take part. That's from Erdogan. And of course, what you just said with Macron from RT, Erdogan says Macron needs mental health treatment and doesn't understand freedom of religion. So, you know, there you're seeing a lot of different statements. I think there's no doubt that Armenia is definitely taking a much more diplomatic approach to this. Aliyev warning Russia, I think, I'm actually kind of stunned that he would issue such a warning. I think he wouldn't issue such a warning unless Turkey told him to issue such a warning. Erdogan pretty much telling Moscow, we're going to be part of this Minsk group. Erdogan saying, we need to be part of this Minsk group. Whether Russia will agree, I don't know. And then Erdogan calling Macron, what was the words again, saying that he needs mental health treatment. That's not going to help.
No, it's not. I mean, the point about Erdogan wanting to be part of the negotiations is what I think he's been aiming for all along. I don't think he's ever really believed, or at least I don't think that he's believed, that Azerbaijan would actually recapture Nagorno-Karabakh. But what he wants is for Turkey to be brought in as a mediator in the Caucasus. The Russians are going to resist that intensely. So are the Armenians, of course. But the Russians will resist it because, of course, they fought wars against Turkey to drive Turkey out of the Caucasus. They will not want to see Turkey coming into the Caucasus, which they consider to be very, very much their sphere of influence. They're not happy about the fact that the United States is involved there. There's not very much they can do about that because the United States is the great superpower. They will not be too concerned about France because France is far away. But Turkey, from the Russian point of view, is a disruptive influence. And there was a very, very interesting telephone call between Putin and Erdogan about 2 weeks ago, about 10 days ago. The Russians delayed publishing the readout, but they did eventually do so on the Kremlin's website. And it's quite clear that Erdogan and Putin, if you read it carefully, had a huge row. And Putin basically accused Turkey, or Erdogan, of sending jihadi fighters to the Caucasus. It's in the readout. And clearly Erdogan wasn't happy. So you can see that the Russians will not want and will resist hard any attempt by Erdogan to get involved in the affairs of the Caucasus. I think the Russians will prevail. I mean, I'm sure they will. They are trying to give Erdogan, as they always do, and I know it's frustrating to lots of people, an off-ramp. But they are reminding him, and this is what Putin's comments, which I've just read, which were made yesterday, by the way, are all about, which was that, bear in mind, you depend on us economically now. Your economies aren't in particularly good shape. Azerbaijan is in a bad way because the oil price has fallen, and Azerbaijan is a major oil exporter, and oil is a major part of your economy. Turkey, well, we now have a big trading relationship with Turkey. Do you, Aliyev and Erdogan, really want to put that at risk? And of course, I have no doubt at all that the Russians are providing now military assistance to Armenia. But I would stress again, it looks to me as if the fighting is now basically in stalemate.
Yeah, but Azerbaijan has made all those gains. I would imagine they've made all those gains because it is essentially the Turkish military. Those gains that they're reporting. They're reporting, at least. Yeah. For example, you said the shooting down of the, said the S-300s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So yes. I would imagine, and I hear they have some.
Which is a major, I mean, that was quite a major achievement. I have to say, it does call into question the way the Armenians were operating those systems, because they seem to have been far too close to the front line if they were going to be destroyed in that way. But clearly, the Azerbaijanians are getting a lot of help from Turkey. And in fact, one of our viewers has written to us and has said that, you know, that there are Turkish special forces operating in the Caucasus. So I am sure this is a very serious issue. Carry on.
That was what I was going to say. There's no doubt that whatever gains are being made by Azerbaijan or small little victories in the region is due to the fact that there is a Turkish presence on the ground, whether also at a high military official ranking or on the ground, soldiers and special forces there. We also know that they've been employing some very sophisticated drone technology, along with the technology being provided to Azerbaijan, not only from Turkey, but from Israel, and up until recently from Canada as well. Yeah. Though I know that Canada has just said that they're going to stop providing weapons to Azerbaijan now. Mm. So Russia could have, if it wanted to, provide even more military assistance to Armenia in order for Armenia to inflict reciprocal, say, damages to Azerbaijan if it wanted to. It doesn't seem, though, that Russia is doing that. At least that's the impression that I get. It is a stalemate. But if Russia really wanted to put its weight behind Armenia, then, you know, Armenia could do some serious damage to Turkey and to Azerbaijan if Russia really wanted to, you know, put their foot on the pedal. But they're avoiding that.
Yes,
and
they are.
Can you say that that has opened the door to the U.S.? We also have to keep in mind that there's a very strong and powerful Armenian diaspora in the U.S., and I'm sure that they're applying maximum pressure on the Trump White House in order to get something done to stop the fighting. I mean, this is just common sense.
Yes. Let's unpack what the Russians are doing. I mean, first of all, the Russians can certainly provide overwhelming military help to Armenia. I mean, they could certainly help the Armenians deal with these Turkish drones. We saw what happened at the start of this year when the Turks used drones against the Syrian army in Idlib province. And for a time, they were using them very effectively. And then the Russians provided the Syrians with anti-drone technologies. They have various types of surface-to-air systems. Like, there's a particular system called the Pantsir, and there's another one called the Tor, which are designed to deal with drones. And they were deployed against the Turkish drones in Idlib province at the start of this year, and they proved very effective. And I'm sure they could do the same to Armenia. I'm going to make a guess. I think they probably are going to start providing that kind of technology to Armenia. They could also provide Armenia, if they wanted to, with offensive technology. They can help Armenia, if you like, launch long, deep strikes into Azerbaijanian territory. They could even go further. I mean, you know, their military in the Caucasus is on a completely different scale to anyone else's. If they wanted to, well, they could attack Azerbaijan, they could capture Baku, they could do all these things. They're choosing not to. And the reason they're choosing not to is because they don't want to jeopardize their long-term relationship with Turkey. And with Azerbaijan, as Putin said in that interview, which I've just quoted, is a country which is friendly to Russia. So they don't want to drive it away, and they don't want to drive Turkey away. But, and I come back to what I've said on previous programs, if Erdogan and Aliyev push this too far, there will come a point when the Russians will do it. At the moment, they are not doing it. They're always, if you like, slow. But as I've said previously, with the Russians, there's the famous quote, which goes back to the 19th century, they're slow to get on their horses, but when they do, they ride very fast. That was what happened with Georgia in 2008. That's what happened in Syria, and it could happen in the Caucasus at any moment. But at the moment, they are working for a diplomatic solution because they see it in their interests to do so. The fact that they are going for a diplomatic solution has opened the door to the United States. It has made it possible for the United States to play an active role in the diplomacy. And for the moment, the Russians are not concerned about that because it complements their own diplomatic efforts. If Turkey pivots back to the US, it would be different. But at the moment, it's not doing so because the US is taking the Armenian side, which is the side that the Russians are also quietly backing.
Final question, would if Erdogan and Azerbaijan push too far and Russia continues to back away and doesn't do anything, does the US or France push Turkey back and Azerbaijan back?
Well, I have to say I find that very difficult to believe, because if the US and, I mean, there was some talk in the US of a no-fly zone, but I mean, how on earth would you enforce it in that region? I mean, one thing I can absolutely categorically say, the Russians will never allow that in the Caucasus. They would never allow the US to start, you know, implementing no-fly zones in the Caucasus. At the end of the day, the Russians, as I said, are in an overwhelmingly strong military position.
Outside of a no-fly zone. Can the French or the US do something if, once again, Turkey pushes too hard and Russia continues to show an inactivity?
Well, I think that would effectively mean launching an attack on Turkey itself, because I can't really see how else it could be done. And I think that would be a dramatic escalation, which, by the way, I don't think anybody's thinking about. I don't think the Russians are thinking about launching an attack on Turkey itself. On Azerbaijan, it's a different matter. By the way, the Russians have acted before against Azerbaijan. They did so, I think, it was in 1989, when the Russian military actually stormed Baku on one occasion. And they could do it again. So I think they don't want to do it. They're looking for a diplomatic solution. I think, as I said, the fighting is in stalemate. I don't think they feel under any particular pressure to do it. The Armenians are not asking for it at the moment. That, by the way, has been confirmed by the Armenians themselves. But if situation ever were to escalate further, if, say, Erdogan were to deploy large numbers of Turkish troops openly in the Caucasus, not in the covert way that he's doing so now, if he were, say, to send armoured units into the Caucasus, if the Turkish Air Force was to be committed to the fighting, then I think it would be a completely different story.
Okay, so from a diplomatic level, you have Russia, the US, and France. Erdogan is trying to also get in on it, but right now you have these three powers, which will try to find a diplomatic solution.
Yeah,
taking the lead will be Russia. On a military level, there's very little, slim to none, that the US or France can get involved. Maybe. If Erdogan pushes too hard, Russia may up the ante.
I'm sure the Russians have warned him of this. I mean, I said there was this extraordinarily angry telephone call between Putin and Erdogan, which, by the way, happened to Erdogan's insistence, because Putin hasn't been replying to his calls, apparently. But this was on the 14th of October. So I'm sure the Russians have given those warnings already. The Russian defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, who is, by the way, widely suspected in Russia of being sympathetic to Turkey. He speaks Turkish, but apparently he's been talking to his opposite numbers in Turkey. And the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, who is, by the way, he's part Armenian. His father is Armenian. He actually said that, he repeated a Russian joke. If you won't talk to Lavrov, you'll end up talking to Shoigu. In other words, he is the velvet glove because he does the diplomacy, but Shoigu is the mailed fist. So I'm sure the Russians have set out red lines. I'm sure the Turks will not breach those red lines. I think it would be reckless for them to try. And I'm sure there will be a ceasefire at some point, because the other thing I should say is that, quite apart from anything else, the geography is very difficult for offensive operations. It's Nagorno-Karabakh is a very mountainous region, and the winter is closing in. And you know, we're not talking about the winter in Europe. We're talking about the winter in the mountains in the Caucasus, which are higher mountains than the Alps. So it's not a good place to launch major military offensives in winter. So this is going to end soon in terms of the fighting. The actual conflict will go on for a very long time. I don't see any outcome to that anytime soon.
Okay, well, we'll continue to monitor the story, as we said in the open. It's there's very little information out there, but whatever information you get, it seems to be changing on a daily basis, or at least
yes.
You know, that's what you read.
You read, exactly. It's not always easy because, of course, especially if you are on the attack, which is what the Azerbaijanians are, you have to keep up your morale by claiming victories. But
Well, the difficult part in all of this is that, like I said, you have a lot of media, English-speaking media, at least coming out from the Turkish side. Just flooding the interwebs.
Yes.
But on the Armenian side, you don't have a very powerful international media, but you have the Russian media from the English standpoint. And they've been on a total, lockdown. Well, they haven't said anything.
They're under instructions. They're clearly under instructions because they don't want to destabilize the negotiations. But you know, believe me, they could press a switch, as I remember it happened in 2015. And things can change there. But for the moment, the Russians are playing the diplomatic game, which they always do. It can be very infuriating for a lot of people. It can be very, very exasperating, but that is the way they always run things. They never go for an immediate knockout. They always act incrementally until they feel themselves, if they have to, in a position where they can move, but they're in a strong position to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've been trying to figure out stuff from the Russian state media side of things to try and get a more accurate picture, at least from the Russian-Armenian side. But there's just slim pickings out there. Yes, there's just not much being relayed,
I know. Well, we have to fill the gap. Yeah, we have to fill the space. We are the people who provide, if I can put it like this, the objective and that news and analysis of this.
All right, we'll leave it there. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Guys, please subscribe to the channel. Look for us on BitChute and on Odyssey as well. Please subscribe to us on those alternative platforms as well. Please join the Duran Network on Subscribestar and Patreon. We're going to be giving merchandise discounts. We're going to be giving away ebooks, and we're going to be doing exclusive content. So that's all coming up on Patreon and Subscribestar. Of course, donate to us on PayPal. Really helps this channel out a lot. And of course, go to the Duran shop, pick up some merchandise, which also helps out this channel a lot.
Absolutely.
And don't forget our Discord server. Check out our Discord server as well.
So there we go. I've got the United States. Alex is Britain. Well, I've also got Britain also somewhere. But look, this is the Duran itself. This is our own mug. And there's Germany. And there is England.
Here we have
Armenia. One of the oldest nations in Europe, by the way, for those who are not familiar, the first Christian country, a point, by the way, which Putin has referred to on other occasions, but it is the first Christian country. It became Christian before Constantine the Great converted to Christianity. And it has a huge history before that. I was, always interested in Roman history. And I was once reading about how the king of Armenia actually visited Rome and was received there by none other than the Emperor Nero. What other European country can you say that about, that its leader actually had dealings with the Roman Empire? And so there we go. The Armenians are still there in the same region, and their history is extremely, extremely old. And they will remain there. They will be there despite all the problems. I expect that they will probably outlast us all. But anyway, just to say, that's the Armenian flag on one of our mugs. And we also have our amazing shirts. There it is again. We have our amazing shirts, many of them with flags on them. And we got our hats. And Alex was showing you the hat with the British, the mug with the British flag. Well, there's a hat with the British Union Jack on it. You can also, I've got two of them because, of course, I am in Britain. So just as Alex said, We are the channel that provides you with all this news and analysis. We not easy for us to do sometimes. We rely on your support. You support us by coming to our shop and getting things there, and also by going to all those other things, Patreon and Subscribestar that Alex was talking about. And I would add, if you come to our shop and you buy all the things that we have there, the absolutely great things we have there, you will not be disappointed. They are amazing, wonderful things. The feedback we get is tremendous. So come to the shop, support us.
You'll find the link for everything down below. Alexander Medcurse, thank you very much. Take care, everybody.